Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to episode 17 of the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of elite mountain biking. First up, thanks for all the feedback on the latest episode with Katie Kerd. Really glad you enjoyed it, and it sounds like a few of you have learned something about the concussion side of things, which is super important, so we're glad to hear it. We're going to do a bit of a follow-up with the guys from Pure Body Balance and get into more detail on concussion, so there'll be more information coming. Keep an eye out for that in a future episode. Okay, we've got a competition for you this week. A good friend of the show has set up a company called Chamonix MTB in the Chamonix Valley. He's been living there for 15 years and he knows the trails inside out. He knows where all the really, really good stuff is that you'd never find if you went on your own. He's offering one day of guiding for the winner and three of their lucky friends. All you need to do is get yourself to Chamonix, get your lift passes for the day, and then Wayne will show you around and show you all the best trails that the valley has to offer. If you want to have a look at the kind of riding they've got, then check out their website, chamonixmtb.com. All you have to do to win is look out for our competition post, which will be going out on Instagram and on Facebook on Wednesday the 6th of September. You need to make sure that you follow us and Chamonix MTB on either Instagram or Facebook. To find us on Instagram, it's at Downtime Podcast and at Chamonix MTB. And on Facebook, it's at The Downtime Podcast. And again, it's at Chamonix MTB. Go to the post. Add a comment, tell us why you'd like to ride in the Chamonix Valley, and we'll pick a winner in 2 weeks' time. Okay, let's get on to this week's guest. We're lucky to have Phil Atwell from the Propane Dirt Zelvi team join us. He is unfortunately out injured for the rest of the season, so we took the time to sit down and have a good chat about how his season went. It was a super interesting chat, really nice to chat to, and as a result, we went on a little bit longer than normal, so I hope you got some time for this podcast because we get close to the hour mark. Okay, without further ado, here's episode 17 with Phil Atwell. Phil Atwell, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for coming on. How's things?
I'm good, thank you very much. Bit dusty from last night's stag do, but just had a little pedal then and feeling all right.
Excellent.
What questions have you got for us?
Good stuff. Well, let's start off simple then and maybe give us a bit of background on how you got into riding.
Well, my family's quite proactive and they've always like done a lot of riding, like family rides. And I think I got into started to learn to ride when I was like 2.5, 3, took the stabilizers off. And I got distinct memories of riding to nursery on my bike, parking the bike up and then going playing on the little trikes with all the other kids and then riding home. Sweet. After nursery. And then how I started getting into mountain biking a bit more is my school's off my road, and on the way home there's this alleyway with like all these driveways, and like it's pretty fun like now, like if you're tearing down. And I just remember used to just tear down that every day. Used to love that, and had a massive crash at you once and skinned the palms of my hands off, which wasn't so nice, but yeah. And then from there, parents sort of realised that I quite enjoyed that and I was a bit loopy. I did loads of gymnastics and I was renowned for being a bit of an idiot. And we went up Wendover Woods, used to go loads of family rides up there, and then we found out about Aston Hill. And I actually, Mum entered me in a competition because she knew I love run bikes, and it was like this, write a story on how you get to and from school. So Mum pretty much did it for me and made sure I won. And then I won £100. I used that to buy my first bike when I was like 7. I think it was 7. I bought a Gary Fisher tarp on from Mountain Mania and Tring for £150.
Living the
and
dream.
That was me. That was me set. Like I was out on that every night, wheeling a lot. And then, yeah, then we found about Aston Hill when I was about 7, 8. And my dad took me up there and we got involved with Ian Warby, did a load of the Devos. And it all went from there, really, like kicked off loads. Sort of rode more, saved up for another year, bought myself a set of forks. I think it was like some bombers or something, like £100. But yeah, the bike was there. I used to go Devos, and every route I hit, my chain would fall off, and I'd shout Ian, and then he'd come put it on.
Excellent.
And then Ian, yeah, I think Ian whispered something to my dad, said I might be all right. And then Sats week, my dad had bought me... Well, the deal was if I'd done good at Sats, then I got a bike. But I think Dad was quite excited to get me a bike anyway, so it actually arrived before Sats. Mum wasn't too impressed, but yeah, so I got an Orange Patriot. Dad got a good deal on it, so I don't know. But I've raced that from when I was 10. I did my first race at Aston Hill, which was DH3 2005, was it? I'm not sure. But I remember everyone always tells me from that race that I was just the highest in the first jump because I hadn't worked out how to squash things yet.
Excellent.
So then I got friendly with Paul Miles from his Giant Mechanic. He used to work at Fisher's and he pretty much sponsored me out of the Fisher's bin. Because like, I didn't really have a clue about bikes. Did my first race at proper one at Minnithy Dragon with like single ply tyres at like 40 PSI and just sort of cracked on. And then, yeah, he helped us out loads. He used to take my bike and just be a new bike and I'd come back with new brakes, new tyres. I was like, yeah, cheers, bro.
Excellent. And so results come like pretty early doors? Were you competitive straight away at the racing?
Well, it took me probably two or three years of doing Dragons. I remember I used to compete. First sort of year, I started half a season and I was a bit like not sure on setup and stuff. And then once Paul started helping me out a bit, things become a lot easier. And I was getting maybe top 10s, top 15s in juvenile. But I was like one of the youngest kids. I was like 10 or 11 racing. Yeah, I was 11 racing mono 13, 14 year olds. And then like my second year, I started getting podiums. So it was always Billy and Will Mapstone. Billy pretty much won all of them. And then Will Mapstone he battled a little bit. Them two battled. And then I was always just in third, like always a little bit back. And then I remember my third year and I started winning a few of them, which was quite nice. All the Dragons. And I think I did Nationals then, but the National series, the first one I did, I just crashed all of them. So I never used to ride goggles. And then I went to A Forest and it was rainy and I got mud in my eyes or something. Then I started wearing goggles. No, I did have goggles. I had tints on, but I couldn't stand them. And I went into the first corner and just crashed because I couldn't see. And then I got mud in my eyes again.
So pretty like a loose riding style from the start then?
Yeah. I guess so. Yeah, well, after year three, I pretty much won everything as a juvenile, I think, which was cool.
Sweet, good effort.
It's quite nice once I got a bit older, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then youth, it was a bit more of a battle, but yeah, I did have a couple of wins, which was nice.
Cool. And then, so how did the tip in from there to World Cup kind of level come about?
Well, I sort of was doing all right at these Nationals and Pierce winning them, and then I was on, who was I riding for? I was riding, well, so Paul got me another deal with Hotline, so I was riding a Tomac. And then Andy Ayres noticed us and from Madison, and he was whispering about this new Madison team. So then I got on that as for my first year. No, I was actually still a youth. I think so. I did my last year youth on that, pretty much won a lot of things, which was good. And then, yeah, got into World Cups through the Saracen team.
Sweet. And then another learning curve, I guess, from there. Like, it's a big change, right?
Yeah, massively. Like, I was so nervous my first race. Like, went to South Africa with Will Longdon was managing it that year. And, like, I was riding good. And then I pretty much went over the bars on one of them 80-foot jumps. That scared the life out of me.
Yeah, they're not messing around with the jumps there, are they?
No. Well, you get there and you're like, yeah, you've got to go fast. But I was riding fast. It was just a sketchy junior.
Sweet.
So I went over the bar. I was like in the air in my quali run. I was like shaking before the top, like pretty nervous. And then started having a pretty good run. I'm like, yeah, this will be all right. And then got into the rhythm and then just come to the jump. Just got kicked. And then landed on the balance point at the front wheel. Thought I was going over on the knuckle of the landing. And then I hit my chin off the stem and bounced backwards. And bounced the whole way back and landed on my back. And when I got up, I was pretty much on the next lip. I'd slid so far.
Whoa.
I was like, whoa, World Cups are gnarly.
It's a good introduction, isn't it?
So, yeah. Awesome. But no, I was a bit worried first year, you know, because I thought I knew I had the speed, but I just couldn't qualify for like, so I didn't qualify at that one. And then I went to Val de Sol and I was even more nervous because the pressure was sort of on my shoulders to qualify and do good at the first one. I didn't qualify at that one, but I think I ripped about 10 mechs off instead, which the team was really excited about.
I bet, yeah.
As you can imagine. And then I finally qualified at Fort William, and then I relaxed, and it was all good.
Excellent. And how did the propane dirt Zelby thing come about then? Because that's the team you're with at the moment, right?
Yeah. Well, the propane deal come about when Robert messaged me asking if he wanted to start a little deal together, because they really wanted to get their brand out there. And I was like, I knew Ben was looking for a frame deal at the moment, really. So I was like, yeah, maybe. And so I put them in contact with each other, and then off it went. Like, it's been working quite smoothly since.
Cool,
which is
good. And you've been enjoying working with them. It looks like a cool setup.
Yeah, like Robert and all the dudes at Propane are sound like they know when to be serious, and they know when to have a good laugh, and they listen to loads of the feedback from all of us, and like we've pretty much worked like hand in hand to make the Downhill bike the way it is now, like the team and Robert, which is pretty cool.
Nice. So yeah. What sort of things have you changed then from the first version of that bike to what it is now?
Well, the very first one we got was tiny. Like their large was like a medium, so we stuck loads of it on, and Robert was getting scared that we're making massive long bikes, and then I was like, no, these work really well, this length. And then, so with the Alley one had, we give them a measurement for the Alley one. We dropped, I don't know, they made it longer, maybe did something with the BB height, and maybe changed an angle or something. And then from what we learned with that one, we made the carbon one with adjustable head tube and all sorts of stuff, which is quite nice. I think the boys have pretty much got the length spot on and all that, which is good.
Wicked, yeah.
Maybe need a bigger one. Maybe need a bigger one for Montanam, but that's a bit of an exception.
Because of the speed, you mean, or?
Yeah, just the speed, man. You just want a long bike to make it. Well, that's what I feel like, anyway.
Fair play.
But yeah.
And what sort of stuff do you do? Are you the kind of person that is a bit of a run what you brung, or do you spend quite a bit of time on setup at a race?
Yeah, like I think I come across as a pretty much run what you brung, but that's definitely not how I am. Like I'm pretty clued up with all my settings. I pretty much tell you exactly what clicks all my things have got on my race bike anyway, for sure. And like my levers, I'm so fussy with my brake levers. Like I've got them all like. So the SRAM ones have got that little square you can see the bar through. So I've always, when I get comfortable, I like scratching a little mark. So they're never like they're perfect. And I run my back brake lever pretty bloody close to the bar. So I like it to like barely move and then bite. But so we had to do a custom job on that, on the current brake to make that screw smaller so it come closer.
All right, okay. Something you've got used to over time, or is there a reason for it?
I'm a bit wonky when I ride, like you see like one arm in the air or something like that. it's just how it feels comfortable, yeah, so I've just stuck with it. Like I used to run levers on the piss a little bit, but I think they're pretty level now.
Interesting. What are the main things that you'll change on your bike then from one race to the next?
If it starts getting wet, I'll be putting a cut spike on the back, not the front. I'll be leaving the driver all day long. People think I'm retarded, but... it definitely makes me go faster.
What do you think that does for you? Why does that work?
Well, because your back wheel's always pushing when it's greasy, always, and you've got a lot more weight in the front wheel. And I just find if you're going around a corner, the back end's trying to step out more so than the front for me, my style. So if the back end's not stepping out, then that energy's going forward and you're making you go faster.
Okay, so it helps balance the bike a bit more front to rear.
Yeah, just if it, I find if it's a bit greasy or it's wet, then for sure, if it's not full... like absolutely muddy, like then I'll just chuck a cart in the back and I'll be smiling.
Yeah. What else are there? Other things that you change dependent on kind of speed, steepness, roughness of trail?
Maybe if it rains as well, maybe at the fork a bit harder. Maybe click here and there with the rebound and maybe take a bit low speed off the back or something. But depends what the track is. Yeah, we've pretty much got a good base setting, and depending on which track, we'll do a couple of clicks here, a couple of clicks there, but it won't be nothing dramatic. Like, I've been running them new, what's it, have you heard of them race only springs?
Oh, yeah, I've seen some stuff about that on social media.
Shannon's been done a real good job with them, so we've had one of them in the fork this year. And yeah, the extrusion stuff works quite well when I'm in, so I'm pretty stoked.
Cool.
It's all good.
Yeah. So one of the smaller teams in the pits, I guess, non-elite, I think, this year. I'm guessing the salaries aren't huge for those, you know, riders on those teams. How do you make ends meet? Is it a case of, you know, having to kind of scrimp and save, or is it still a decent enough salary?
Well, yeah, I had to do a bit of work this winter. I've pretty much worked every winter, but like hopefully, well, next year I should be quite a bit more comfortable, which would be nice. So yeah, I've been a lot of scrimping and saving, and a lot of a lot of overdraft.
And what sort of work have you been doing over the winter? Is it bike related or completely different?
This year I didn't have to do as much work, but I did like, I don't know, a little bit of gardening at youth. I was still in New Zealand actually, which was a bit fun. Quite enjoyed that. And then previous years I did a load of roofing with Leadcraft. Did like 6 months, and then I did a year. Yeah, pretty much between races I was doing roofing. I quite enjoyed that actually. So in the winter it's sad, but it was alright.
Yeah,
and then I've done, but I did 2 years of carpentry at school, but at college, but I never really found a carpentry job. So I've done a winter doing removals. That was right, pretty funny. Got loads of like random free stuff out of people's houses. Pretty interesting. And then what else to do? Yeah, I did last winter, not this winter, winter before. I did 6 months solid of groundwork with mate Terry.
Yeah,
I got pretty strong, but that was pretty boring. Like, well, not boring, but it's just, oh, it's horrible. It's just in a muddy, frozen hole for about 3 months of your life. But yeah,
gets you ready for a rainy, wet season, though, I guess.
Yeah, that's the sort of stuff that gets you determined to try and achieve what you want to achieve and get to the position where you don't want to, you don't have to work. That gives you a bit of drive. But yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. And go on.
No, I was just going to say, so any kids looking to make it as a pro rider, if you work hard doing other stuff, it definitely motivates you to get there and yeah, keep your head down and straight and narrow.
Makes sense. Good stuff. And you've done a bit of coaching in your time as well, is that right?
Yeah, I did my coaching qualification with Ian Warby up at Aston Hill. It was like a week-long course. But yeah, learnt loads about my own riding. And like, sometimes when I'm riding now, I can like switch to coach mode and then like work out why I've done that. And then it's quite useful, like really useful, to be fair.
Interesting.
But yeah, I've done a little bit. I'd like to do a lot more. Like, it's always good helping out the Devos up the hill, because then little kids are absolutely mental. Like, but yeah.
Excellent. And are there any kind of common mistakes that you see a lot of people make when you're coaching?
Yeah, like a lot of things that people don't realise is like loads of people just go through a section without breathing at all, and they'll be stiff. And so you get people breathing, you get people looking, like breathing, looking, and body position are like the three big factors. There's loads of factors you can play with to change people's riding. Yeah, I find a lot of people that don't breathe as much as they should and don't look as early as they should and stuff like that. But
when you say look, you mean like looking further down the trail, or?
Yeah, like the further you look down the trail, the faster you can go, because you've already processed the obstacles coming up. So stuff like that. But it's quite satisfying watching people when you coach, because you can see them progressing, and that, like, that's a pretty good feeling.
Yeah, and cool for people to get coached by someone at your level as well, right?
That's it. Like all this wheelie scene's kicking off. Lovely, like over. Have you seen it? All the kids are out wheeling flat out. My mum's got a school in Harrow, so they're all sort of getting into that. She's like, I'll have to bring you in to teach them all how to wheelie. They'll love it.
Excellent. I've got, well, myself included, and plenty of mates that all need to learn to wheelie properly.
Yeah, we've just been for a ride then. We meant to see my dad's mate Rob on the boat. I'm trying to get my dad to wheelie. Oh, it's pretty scary, but he's getting the front wheel up for a 60-year-old. Like, he's doing all right.
Good going, yeah. 60 learning to wheelie's cool.
He's wrenching the bars, and he's not. I'm like, Dad, you've got to have a finger on the back brake, and he's just trying to wrench the bars up with like death gripping. I'm like, oh my God, this could end quite badly.
Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to seeing some Wheelie Wednesday from your dad then at some point.
Yeah, I'll try and do a joint one with my dad.
Excellent.
He nearly fell in the canal the other day trying to do one.
Good stuff. So let's talk a little bit about this season then. So start off on Lourdes, possibly not the best start to the season for you, I think, with some tyre issues in quali. Talk us through that bit.
Yeah, wasn't stoked, man. So I'd had a real good winter. I'd put in some real hard work, doing solid training. It was all pretty structured, and I'd been out in New Zealand 3 months. And yeah, it was like I was real ready for the season. And then come into quali. Quali run was going pretty good, and then yeah, just blew up the tyre, and therefore resulting blowing up my back wheel, and then had to run across the finish line. I was like, it's only like 10 seconds off or 15 seconds off.
Off the top of the qualifier.
I was like, you joking? But yeah, I was pretty gutted. But like, what can you do? Like, shit happens essentially, and you just got to keep your head high and move on to the next one.
Yeah.
So come round two, I was pretty determined to just qualify, and then we can start working on getting a good race run.
Yeah, so Fort William then, how did that weekend go?
Yeah, it was an interesting one with all weather. What else happened at Fort William? There was a few things going on. But yeah, no, that wooded section was quite fun. So I was loving that woods the whole week, and I had it pretty mint most runs. And then bloody race run, I just did the penguin for it with two legs, and that was the end of the race run. But still, I got qualified 20th there, which I was pretty happy about, step in the right direction, and then got a 30th or 29th or something.
So I thought you had 17th.
It's not where I wanted to be, but it was a step in the right direction considering Lords didn't go at all how I wanted to go. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah. There's a lot of people complaining, a lot of riders complaining about that wooded section. What are your thoughts on that?
It is a funny one, like, because it was bloody different every run. It's not like it's hard and it's pretty consistent. Like, you could come down one run and then you do your next run and there was a bloody hole the size of your front wheel that's just about to eat you. So yeah, maybe, like, I love sketchy technical stuff, but maybe if it was tamed down a bit or something. But I don't know. It'd be nice to see consistent races. It's horrible to see people winning and losing because of some, like, stupid crash that didn't need to happen.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I don't know. If we had a World Cup track like that, top to bottom, I don't know. Might be an interesting sport. I might have to wear a swimming costume for it.
Excellent. And then on to Valnord, and you started turning up the heat a bit, right?
Valnord, yeah. Well, no, we had Lear Gang first. Yeah. So I did a lap on my hardtail because that was a bit of a pathetic track. But
yeah, what do you think about that? Is it actually?
Like,
once you get up to speed, is it any good? Like,
it's gnarly just because the speed you're doing, they're like 45 miles an hour, near 50. Like, and if you make a mistake at that speed, it's gonna hurt for sure. But it's only gnarly because of the speed. Like, you could, like, I'd send my mum down there just like, and she'd probably be right. But I think World Cup tracks should be like, there's not many tracks now that you walk and think, shit, like, how am I gonna get through that? Like, I think that needs to be a bit of an element into the World Cup racing. Like, well, like, I want tracks that make us top boys and, like, the best boys nervous. That'd be nice. Because, like, I used to get nervous when I first started riding for, like, features and obstacles, but now I'm pretty confident. But it'd be nice to have something like, well, yeah. And Lear Gang didn't really have that, to be honest.
No, fair play. Yeah. And then, so then on to Valnord from there?
Sorry, dog fly.
Sorry.
Naughty! Yeah, off to Andorra, man. I was so excited for Andorra because I was riding real good there. Lottie! Yeah, I was riding real good there the year before, and then I had a lot of pressure on my shoulders to meet, like, all these bonuses and all these things that shouldn't have been in my head when I'm trying to get ready for a race run, to be honest. And then I crashed and I really hurt my knee, which sucked. So I was pretty confident to go there this year and chuck down a good result. And yeah, after second run, I was ready for qualifying, I felt. I only did 5 runs in practice, and I knew I had some good speed. So 7th in time training or something, and I was like, oh, happy days. And then did a goodish quali, I think it was 13th. I had a pretty messy one, and then ended up 9th and was absolutely stoked. Like,
yeah, that's yeah. Awesome. So only 5 practice runs?
Yeah, only on the first practice day, yeah. Because after the second run, the track was pretty much the same as the year before, and all my lines I did last year were pretty dull, and I was pretty happy with them. So
interesting. I read something the other day about Aaron Gwynn doing kind of minimal amount of practice that he feels he can get away with. Do you think that helped at all, having a bit more freshness? Or
yeah, for sure, because, like, a World Cup week is a massive week on the body. Like, you're walking down a mountain, and then you do a lot of, not loads of time on the bike, but, like, it's quite mentally straining as well. So the less, if you're happy with how you're riding and you can get away with doing less runs, you're going to be fresher come Sunday for sure, which I think is an advantage, unless it rains and it all goes tits up, which is definitely an option these days.
yeah. And then Lenzerheide, right?
Yeah, Lenzerheide.
and a podium.
Yeah, well, I absolutely hated that track, and I've not qualified there for the last 2 years. So first year, I separate my shoulder. Second year, I had an arm wrestle with my teammate, James, and I beat him, but I pulled, like, something in my elbow, like the stupidest thing. So I couldn't straighten my arm. So
helpful for
riding. I was riding without being able to straighten my arm. It was absolutely retarded. But so I didn't qualify that year. I missed it by a couple of seconds. And then this year, I actually asked Ben if I could miss the race and go to Mega Avalanche because I didn't want to go that much because I hated the track that much.
Wow. Worse than Lea Gowen for you, or?
Oh, yeah. Before this year, I thought it was the worst track on the circuit. I weren't really stoked with it because it's all like hard packed with like these death gravel. Mm. And like, if you look at the statistics, it's the track that most people get wrecked, and they get properly wrecked there. Like, yeah, I don't like seeing my mates get wrecked. So, but yeah. So yeah. And then after second run practice, I still asked Ben if I could go to Mega because I was not loving it. And then like, I really had to concentrate hard, man, to get my head into it. Like, it's not an easy track to flow. Like Andorra, you drop in and you just smile and it's amazing. And like the berms and it's just, oh, but like, then's hard. You got to be switched on. You got to know when you can push, like when you can go light on the bike, and you've got to be quite precise with your lines and loads of loose gravel everywhere. So yeah, I must have done like 6 or 7 runs there just to really try and find the flow. Like it's not a massively long track, so it didn't take it out of you as much as like Andorra. If you do a lot of runs, that's like a big day and your arms are going to be pretty sore and stuff like that. Well, mainly your feet. I don't really get arm pumped too much, just my feet. But yeah, lens hard, yeah. So practice day went all right. I actually surprised myself. I was like top 20 in time training. I was like, wow, didn't really expect that, to be honest, at that one. I just wanted to get through that weekend, win, get some points. And then qualifying, I had the crappiest run I thought I'd done all weekend. Like, I knew it was a bit of speed there, but I must have made 5 or 6 mistakes. And I come like 15th. I was like, what? I was like 14th, 15th. I was like, I come through and I was like, Ben, that timing must be broken. I was pretty serious that something had gone wrong with the timing, but apparently not, so happy days. Yeah. So, and then going off my time then to the winning qualifying time, I was like, yeah, I knew in my head I could easily do that. So I was pretty stoked, to be honest. I was like, bloody hell, that's a nice surprise. And then, yeah, then the race run, like, I was pretty chilled at the top. Had the top bit bloody good, and then made a little mistake halfway down in the middle, like just didn't carry enough speed, like a little bit of a stall, but apart from that it was all right. And then come across the line on the time that I predicted I'd pretty much do. Like, I was trying to go sub-3 and then I got a 3-minute dead, but I said I'd be around there. And yeah, sat it out. And then Aaron Gwynn was coming down. I was in, so worst result I could get was 6th when Gwynn was on the way down, and then he got a puncher and I was just like, oh shit, like I didn't know what to do. I was like, well, it sucks you got a puncher, but I'm on the podium. I just went mental.
Yeah, how did it feel then? First World Cup senior podium.
Yeah, it was good. I think I was drunk on it, to be honest, already. But
had you been drinking on the hot seat then, or?
Not if the UCI is listening, but yeah, we had the walk bottles full of beer, for sure. I don't get it. Like, I want to sit there and drink a pint, and I only want to drink a beer because it looks badass drinking a beer in the hot seat. Like, I don't see why. What a big deal is. Like, someone started to sneak me one at Andorra, and a bloody UCI comes around and just grabs it and sells off of it. It's like, what?
So that's a UCI rule, is it? You're not allowed to drink in the hot seat.
I don't know if it's a UCI rule, but maybe he was just thirsty himself. But you're allowed a chainsaw in a hot seat, just not allowed a pint. Apparently, it's too dangerous.
It's a bit strange, isn't it? Gin and tonic, can you get away with that?
Last year at Lea Gowen, we did a full bottle of gin in the hot seat.
Good going.
But yeah, no, it was pretty cool standing on that podium, man. I was like, whoa, this is amazing. Like, I was pretty stoked. That was like a dream come true for me.
So, yeah. So does that kind of open something up in you that you know you can do it now?
For sure. Like, having been stood up there once, I know I can get there again, and it's a whole load more confident. Like confidence, and yeah, and like, I'm really excited to go into next year and see what I can do when I throw down the perfect run.
For sure, yeah.
But like, the weirdest thing happened after the hot seat. So I got off the podium in Lenzerheide, and then like, everyone's taking pictures of us or whatever, and then this couple come up to me, and this mate, he's just like, pushes his wife in towards me. He's like, please just kiss my wife. It's like, what the hell? He's like, just get off with my wife. I'm like, no.
That's the strangest request I've heard.
I know. And oh dear, that they must have been drunk as well. But yeah, we'll leave that story.
There you go. That's what a podium does for you.
Yeah, apparently so.
Throwing themselves at you.
Strange one, really, but all right.
Sweet. And then MSA, not an ideal travel scenario for you.
Oh, mate, that was a nightmare. So we left Tuesday, which is probably a bit late. We should probably have flown Monday, but whatever. Then like normally it's all right if everything goes smooth, but there was like our plane that we were meant to get on had landed too heavy and the pilot was not safe. He wasn't confident to fly it. So we had to wait a night in Gatwick and then got on the plane the next day, which was also delayed. So then we missed all our connecting flights and then we left my house on Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock and I didn't get to Montserrat until Thursday, 3 a.m. I was absolutely knackered. Like,
I bet.
And then I had 3 hours sleep, or about 5 hours sleep, or whatever. Went and walked the track as practice was starting, and then cracked on.
Yeah, how do you deal with that then in your head? Like, you've come off an awesome result, you're feeling good, and then that happens.
It was a real kick in the balls. Like, I was pretty good because I wanted to go there and give myself the best opportunity of getting the best result I could, and I sort of already knew in the back of my head I'm on the back foot. But like, you just got to stay positive. Like, you got to try and turn it around. Like, and I rode real good in practice. I like got into it pretty good. Bike felt good. So like, I was there. I just was a bit disconnected from my brain, if you know what I mean. Like, I was that sort of jet lagged and tired. I was which is probably a bit dangerous. Like, the front end pushed a couple of times.
Yeah, not the slowest track for that, is it?
Nah, it's one you want to be switched on and awake. Which, yeah. But nah, all went well. Like, quali chucked down a solid 14th or something, which was all right. I had a few mistakes, but I was like, well, decent enough, can't complain. And then went up for race run and it absolutely pissed down. But because I'm pretty good in the wet, like if it gets wet and technical, I'd say I'm quite confident, if I'm honest. But like, just the puddles were just stopping you dead. Like, just nearly went over the bars on that first jump on the top, just in a big puddle. I was like, whoa. But yeah, no, I had a good run, really. Like, I just come into the woods and just did a 180 before the step down. I just caught a root or some bit of something slick, and that was the end of my run, really. So.
Yeah.
But yeah. Had fun.
And then and then a wrist injury.
Yeah. So I was in Whistler, and I was pretty stoked for Garbo. I'd done all my practice, and then the morning of Garbo, we were off doing a bit of filming with. I wanted to go do a bit of filming for Garfs or something with all like Loose Dog and Brat and 51 crew and all them boys. But yeah, there was this rock line sort of rock thing on freight train, and I thought, I had not been off it before, but I don't know, I thought you could just roll it, and it was like a 2 meter drop and I just got rigged.
Unlucky. Yeah,
I'm pretty gutted, man. Like, I'm pretty allergic to crashing. It brings me up in all these like cuts and bruises and stuff. So try not to do too much of it. Like, I haven't crashed for ages. Like not even at a race, not even practicing. Like, I can't remember last time I've had a big one, and then I had a big one, and it bloody hurt.
Did you know straight away something bad was?
I was sort of pretty confident in the back of my head that nothing was wrong with it. Seriously, like, it went swelled up, and I couldn't ride downhill. I had to get the lift down, but like, the same thing happened to me before Crankworx Rotorua. I was at skate park, went up, did a front wheel stall, went to go fakey, and then I landed on my ass and put my hand down, and my wrist was screwed for like 4 days, and then it was mint. So I was like, just be like that. And then, so I just strapped it up and rested it for like a couple of days, and it got a bit better. Then it started tingling a bit. I was all, so I went and saw the specialist at Crankworx. Natalie hooked me up, and then went and got an x-ray, and it was broke skateboard. So I was pretty devastated.
Yeah, gutted. Yeah, but I guess plenty of time now to relax, get it fixed up, and have a long off season and getting ready for next year.
Yeah, like, I was real gutted, man, because I really wanted to go to Valdosol and throw down a solid one, because I was still 16th in the overall, and I was really wanted to get another podium. That was pretty good, like, to be honest. But like, what can you do? Like, I've had my best season to date, even with dropping 3 rounds essentially. Like, weather, missed one, and mechanical, so can't grumble too much. But like, I was pretty confident. Well, I was sort of in the grey area ish thinking maybe I might be able to get back to Worlds, but like, I don't know, like, had an x-ray and it's still cracked, and it's just like, if you snap your scaphoid. Like, I know a lot of boys have had a lot of problems with it. It's just not a smart thing to do.
Yeah. So yeah, not worth it, is it? Sit it out.
Nah, that's it. Like, I'm only 22, so hopefully all my best results are in front of me.
For sure.
We shall see.
Yeah. Well, you must take a lot of confidence from what you've done this season, right? You've shown you're more than capable of being up there with the top boys, so.
Yeah. I'm pretty stoked. Like, I'm pretty comfortable. Got World Cups now. And just having a good time. If you're smiling, then you're going fast.
Definitely. I was going to say that, actually. Back in the day, you could kind of party and still get on the podium. And then it went through a phase where it felt like it was really serious, and most of the people that were at the top were felt like they were taking it really seriously. But a few of the people that maybe like to party and ride harder are getting back amongst the top level of sport. Do you think you can have fun and party and win these days and balance the two out?
Yeah, like, for sure. Like, everyone likes a good party, but like, I wouldn't be going out partying before a race. Like, you do want to be as rested as you can. But as soon as I do my race run, I would like to be deleting gin and tonics as quickly as possible.
Yeah, it's important to have fun, right?
Yeah, but it's got to be a good mixture. Like, if you're happy and it makes you happy having a beer every night at a race, it's not going to affect your result because you're going to bed happy, like, and you've just been social. Like, it doesn't. Like, I think I had 7 beers before race day.
That's an impressive result, then, eh?
No, I wasn't drunk. Like, it's just little tiny bottles or something, like little wrappers. But I was, because I added it up when I was on the way home on my way from Oz. I was like, oh, actually, I did have a little couple. Probably wouldn't normally do that. Oh, that worked.
Yeah, it worked. There you go. That's the formula. You just got to repeat now.
That's it. But yeah, no, I'm a lot more structured than people probably think. Like, I've got a pretty good plan, like the way I plan out a race week, and like, maybe I look like I'm just messing around and that, but I've done all the important things, all my kits organized, my number boards where it is. Like, I know exactly what's going on, so that's why you can have a bit more fun.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I guess if you've got that plan and you know that everything's under control, then you can
I'm not stressed at a race at all, because I've got a pretty good structure down, and like, I know exactly what I'm doing when I'm doing it, and yeah, always good.
And has that been a change? So, like, the last 2 years have been kind of increasingly more successful for you. Is that something you've changed to have more structure and routine, or is it something else?
For sure. I used to just wing it. Like, I used to go to a race and just go to a race and just not really put much thought into it. And then I worked with a few different people, like, did a bit of, not sports psychology, but like, essentially a bit of like breathing exercises, and like, just got a bit of a good routine going on. Like, worked with Simon Darlington, and he helped me out, like, just made a little plan of like what to do at a race weekend, which I knew pretty much already, but it was nice just like fine tuning a few things. And then I've just stuck with that for the last couple of years, and I'm pretty happy now. Like, when we go up to a race run, I know I'm going to be in the best place I can be in my head, which is pretty much the dream for any racer, is to be in that mindset where you know you can perform at 100%. So,
and are you having more fun as a result, because
for sure.
Cool.
It's a lot easier to relax. Otherwise, you're going up and you're fretting. But like, I'm pretty chill, which is nice. Hopefully, I can tip that.
Good. Yeah. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to ask about 29ers. What are your thoughts on them?
I don't know. Like, it's still a bicycle, but it would have been nice if UCI had made a rule. So, the only thing is, like, yeah, cool, 29ers. If everyone had the access to them, I think it would be fine. But, like, some different team sponsors don't line up. Like, different teams have different budgets. Like, different companies can't make certain things. And, like, it's just that everyone's a bit limited by the equipment they've got. Like, people are on Fox or whatever. Yeah, sweet, you can run a 29er. But, like, we didn't have the option with suspension this year and stuff like that. So, in that respect, if they are faster, it's not essentially fair. Considering we're like the Formula One and mountain biking, we should all be like on spec'd out bikes that are pretty similar. I'd say, like, I don't know if everyone agrees with me, but yeah, I don't know. If I think maybe one might suit me, I'm not sure. I've never ridden one, but like, there's more tire on the ground, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean,
it
hasn't really panned out that they, they've not been obviously faster this season, right? It's been a mixture of wins across different riders and different bikes.
Well, look at Gwyn and what just took the overall, so.
Yeah.
See, like, I think I think it was on everyone's mind going into Lords with like all Syndicate and that on 29er and stuff. I think everyone thought, oh shit, we're on the back foot now, we haven't got a 29er. And then when someone, yeah, and then that Fort William, when like who won Fort William?
Was it Greg?
Was some, yeah, Greg did win actually, yeah. But I think like a few boys got solid results with 650B bikes, and yeah. I think everyone was like, yeah, because if Greg had won by like 10 seconds or something, he'd be like, shit, they're clearly massively faster, but it's not. I think that, yeah, it was on everyone's minds. And then after Fort William or maybe Lee again, it was just like, yeah, whatever, it's still a pretty even playing field, which is nice.
Do you think you could still get on the podium on a 26-inch wheel bike, or has it really moved on from that?
Like, I'm sure there's someone out there that probably could, but I think your life would be a lot harder trying. Well, like, yeah, I think it'd be a lot more difficult for sure. Like, things are progressing quite quickly now with the sport, and yeah, like I think the 650B bikes and the 29s that we got, like most people got a pretty dialed setup now compared to about 5 years ago. Yeah. I'd say.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So let's talk about something other than racing then. You do a lot of social media and a lot of video kind of work. I've really enjoyed particularly watching the British Pie movies. How was it filming those? It looked like a lot of fun.
Filming them is always hilarious. I love working with Tommy. I'm not sure if Tommy loves working with me, but I do love working with Tommy. Nah, like we for the first one, we had that dual slalom segment. Oh, that was hilarious. Everyone just rocked up. I brought a flask of coffee and some cake, and we just had a good time in the woods, riding bikes. Pretty excited. And when it's a big crew filming, everyone gets amped on. Like someone does something, and then like someone else trying to up them, and just like, which is sick. I love that. I love that.
Yeah. And how about riding with Josh in the first one? That looked
riding with Rat, like I look up to Rat a lot, and that was pretty cool for me. I was like, wow, sick segment with Josh.
Yeah,
I was stoked. But like, likewise, we were both pushing each other and we're like working out new lines and like just new gaps and all sorts, and just had a real good day out. And then I got parked in a hedge quite dramatically.
I've seen a few instances of you lot parking yourselves in hedges on that shoot, right?
Definitely, yeah. I had an interesting day. My gearbox broke down on the way there, and I parked myself in a hedge, and then so my linkage fell off my car, my gearbox, I got jammed in second gear, and then Rat put it back on with some bit of duct tape, and then it fell off again, and then he towed me on like a 2 meter rope, and he was going absolutely flat out like an idiot, and I was absolutely terrified. All I could see is just 2 meters, then transit van, and I couldn't see the road. Oh my god. That was eventful.
So the adrenaline was flowing before you started riding.
Adrenaline was, no, that was afterwards.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All was good.
So,
we've got a couple more filming projects coming up now. There's that, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to mention the name of the film, but it's going to be a big film coming out, which is going to be sick. We've done a bit of work with that, and I'm really excited to see the finished project of that. And then, again, we got the biggest slice of pie this year, which, that's probably going to start work on that. Well, hopefully somebody will drop me a message and say when we film it, so we'll see. But I've got to get my wrist strong first. But yeah, I've done do loads of stuff. I'm probably going to, I've got a Greek girlfriend, Eka Polina, so she's real handy with the camera too. So she's going to move over UK this winter. So I'll be doing filming loads of stuff flat out, which would be pretty cool.
Brilliant. Good stuff.
And we're trying to push a new clothing brand as well, FP UK, that we started.
So is this, yeah, Faceplant, is that right?
Yeah, well, we could set it up as Faceplant to start with, but then I wasn't too, like, I thought I was stoked on the name, and then I really wasn't stoked because I thought it was quite negative. I don't really want to see people land their face because we're getting sent some horrific videos.
Ah, right, yeah, okay, fair play.
I didn't really like seeing that, to be honest, but I get called like Freestyle Phil and Filthy Phil quite a bit, so FP UK, I could relate that to myself quite a bit. And yeah, we got some real cool designs, like Cat, Girlfriend Cat's a bloody good at art, and like working with all the guys that have done their industries, they're pretty clued up. So hopefully we get some products soon.
Nice.
Get things rolling, make some more videos. Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty stoked.
Have you got, is there a website up for that yet, or is that coming
soon?
No,
we're still, it'll all be through the Banana Industries sort of website, and we'll get a link from our Instagram, and we just start building it. Like, we literally just started trying to push it now.
Awesome.
Which is cool. Yeah. Cool. I'm quite excited about that.
Keep an eye out for that, yeah. How important do you think the whole sort of social media side of things is for younger riders that are looking to get into racing and get sponsorship and stuff? It feels like it's a big part of it these days.
Well, you could still make a bloody good living if you don't get results, if you do good social media, for sure. Like, yeah. if you're up there, like, for sure, you can, like, boys make real good money out in Whistler and stuff, just doing, getting filming deals, and it's fun, man. Like, I enjoy doing it. I think that's, like, really, really enjoy putting out good videos on the web and seeing people's comments and stuff. It gets you stoked and makes you want to make even better ones, and it's just, like, a good vibe.
Yeah, it gets us stoked to go riding as well when we see these.
That's it, yeah. So when I see the boys post a sick video, I'm like, damn, I want to go do that. Like,
awesome. Good stuff. So out of all these amazing people that you've had the chance to ride with, who's your favourite person? If you could pick one day, you pick one rider, one trail, who would it be and where?
Favourite person to go ride with. Favourite trail. Well, it depends what we're talking trail bikes. Andorra, for sure. I love going laps there. Or where did we went? We went to a good bike park in Germany. Bliss sponsored a bike park in Germany. That was a bloody good day out. Favourite person to ride with? I like ride with everyone. All them 50 to 1 boys are absolutely hilarious to ride with. It's always a good scene. Like I say, when we did that filming with the pie, it was probably like the best vibe ever for filming, which was pretty sick. That gets me well stoked. Lots of smiles.
Yeah, they get.
I can't pick a favourite. I love riding with everyone. Even I've ridden to the pub with Dad, like.
Excellent. Cool. We've got. We're getting close to the end of our time. We've got a couple of questions we've asked most of our guests so far, so we'll hit those. So, first one is: if you had to give your 16-year-old self a bit of advice with everything you now know, what would you say?
There's a lot of things. Don't steal mum's hire car keys and crash it into a bush at 60 mile an hour, because that costs you a lot of money, you retard.
Yeah, that sounds like a good one.
I don't know. What would you tell yourself? Like, I'm trying to think. Yeah, I probably should have screwed my brain a little bit more when I was younger. Like, I got injured loads in my last year as junior, and I just got pissed for a month solid, and I probably shouldn't have done that, and probably should have kept my head screwed on and focused a bit more. But I've learned a lot of things over the years, and I can now I'm being a bit more sensible, but I know when to have a good time.
It's
probably a better sort of method. Cool. If anyone that used to know me when I was a bit younger, I was a bit retarded, but I think I'm a bit more sensible now.
Got it under control. Fair play.
Yeah, I've got it under control, which is good.
And the other one was, if you had £100, or if our guests, if our listeners had £100 to spend to help improve their skills, abilities, performance on a bike, what would you recommend they spend it on? It could be anything: kit, coaching, whatever.
Absolutely, buy a Piaggio Zip moped for £100. I bought one, and it helped me massively with my wheelies and my smiles.
All right. Good.
That's actually the best thing I've ever bought for 100 quid in my life, and it still goes strong now.
Nice.
Absolutely stoked. But yeah, coaching wise, yeah, you wouldn't go wrong with an old go and see me or Ian Warby for a lesson, for sure. 100 quid. Probably how much do we charge? Yeah, you get a few hours for that, for sure.
Yeah.
And then obviously leave a bit of change so you can go to the pub for lunch and get a couple of beers afterwards, and then that'd be a good day out, wouldn't it?
Yeah, perfect. All right, good. Well, we're pretty much at the end, but it's Worlds coming up this coming weekend. First off, super sorry to hear you're not there.
That's right. Well, hopefully I'll be in Greece, so that'd be quite nice. We're planning a mission. I'm not sure if it's going to happen, but plan is to go fly there, see girlfriend Kat, and hang out with her, meet her family and all that, and then potentially buy a Fiat Panda 4x4 if I can afford it, and then hopefully drive it back.
Excellent. Best car ever made, in my opinion.
I know, yeah. They're going up in value, man. I just want one so bad before I can afford.
You can get up anything in those. Snow, ice, no drama.
Have you driven anyone?
Yeah.
You got one?
No, I don't own one. I wish I did. They're very cool.
Yeah, Jobo, he's got a perfect one. I'll get excited and start talking about Fiat Panda.
That's good. Awesome. So, world champs then, who is your money on?
I'm pretty keen to see Loic do well, if I'm honest. Like, there's a few boys out there, like, he's pretty hungry for it, I'm sure. Like, again, I'd see Greg do well. Like, I don't know. I'd like to see my mates do well. Like, just be pretty cool. I'd like to be there myself, really, and try and win it myself, but I'm not. So, well, I don't know. I'm sure I'll watch it though.
So World Champs next year is Lenzerheide, right? Your favourite track.
Well, apparently, I don't know if it's my favourite track, but apparently it goes all right for me. So
yeah, you never know.
I'll tell Ben I want to go Mega Avalanche instead and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, see if it pans out. Good stuff. That's it. Cool. Well, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it. It's been cool to have a chat. If people want to keep in touch, find out a bit more about you, where can they find you on social media?
Yeah, sure. Like Instagram is Phil_Atwill. Drop me a message on there and at some point, maybe not be the speediest reply, but I probably will get back to you at some point. If not, my athlete page, Phil Atwill on Facebook. People keep message me on my personal page, but I don't know if it accepts messages or something. I don't know. But yeah, athlete page and Instagram is all good.
Nice one.
I'd be stoked to hear from you.
Good stuff. Well, we look forward to seeing some video work over the winter. It sounds like there's some cool stuff coming. I hope the wrist gets healed up good and strong and you have a good off season and then more podiums and more concealed alcohol drinking.
Concealed alcohol consumption for the win. Excellent. Yeah, cheers. Yeah, same one. Can't wait to get fit, get strong, get filming, get the projects ticked off, and then get into a real good routine and get strong for next year.
Good stuff.
Pretty confident I can throw down some guns.
Wicked. We'll look forward to it. Yeah, it's always good to see you ride, so be cool, man.
Cheers.
Nice.
Thank you.
Cheers, Phil.
No worries. Thank you.
Well, that's it for episode 17. I hope you enjoyed listening. If you did, we'd really appreciate an iTunes review. Head over, be honest, tell us what you thought. It really helps other people find the podcast, so it'd be great if you got time to do that. In the meantime, get in touch on social media. Let us know what you thought of the episode and the other episodes that we've done so far. And feel free to drop us an email. You can get in touch. It's chris@downtimepodcast.com. We'd love to know what guests you'd like to hear on, and we'll do our best to get hold of them. We've got another guest for you on the 19th of September, but until then, get out and ride.